This is a download from the BBC. You'll find more information at bbcworldservice.com.
Ghana is the ideology of
misleading.
Yes. That is what Nkrumah said.
This group of political science students is having a heated debate about our political leaders. Of the eight leaders we've had since 1957, who do they admire most?
Kwame Nkrumah, to me, is the best president ever.
Kwame Nkrumah is the only true leader in Africa.
My hero has been the former president, Jerry John Rawlings.
Jerry John Rawlings.
I also admire Jerry John Rawlings. He may have his bad side, but I think he has given awareness to Ghanaians.
By far, my hero would be President John Kufuor.
John Kufuor, the gentle giant presiding over Ghana today, the controversial, charismatic Jerry Rawlings in power for 20 years, and the man each leader has had to match up to since Ghana was born 50 years ago. Kwame Nkrumah, the visionary who led us out of colonialism into independence.
At long last, the battle has ended. Ghana, your beloved country, is free forever.
Kwame Nkrumah was ousted by a coup in 1966 and died in exile in 1972. But his vision shaped the new Ghana and made it a beacon of African nationalism. He had had the dream, but the reality was much harder. How to turn this former colonial country into a successful African nation. And the reality of independence is the story of part two of the series, Ghana, Winds of Change. Gamal Nkrumah, Kwame Nkrumah's son, describes those changes after his father's death.
All the euphoria of independence had worn off, and the message of Pan-Africanism also was not as strong as it was. Countries became more and more jealous of their national sovereignties, and the main aim and goal was to preserve power and concentrate power in the ruling cliques, many of which were military. The Cold War was at its height. It was no more a continent full of hope. The problems we now associate with the continent, like corruption, like poverty, the seeds had already been sown in this period where the military seemed to have taken over and totalitarian regimes were the norm throughout the continent.
Nkrumah did his bit. But his ministers and party let him down. It led to a coup, and then the coup degenerates. A handover takes place. 2.5 years, another degeneration of arrogant elitist elements, etc. The atmosphere was ripe for a revolt.
Jerry John Rawlings, JJ to his friends, first came to power in Ghana in 1979. He was 32 years old, half Scottish, a flight lieutenant in the Ghana Air Force. Neither a politician nor an intellectual, he believed he knew what his country needed.
In effect, 79 was nothing more or less than a reaction to the cumulative negative effects of things socially, politically, economically, etc., that were happening. Hardly any electricity, failures all the time, hardly any water. The situation was so volatile, so explosive. It's almost like opening the gas in a kitchen. All you needed was to throw a lit match into it and it would blow. The hatred that was in the society in those days.
Rawlings led a military revolt of a dozen junior officers against senior officers who they perceived as corrupt and arrogant, including the head of state, General Kutu Achampong. The lower ranks were baying for blood, and Rawlings and his newly formed Armed Forces Revolutionary Council complied. They executed 8 officers, including 3 former heads of state.
I believe that there are many others who are...
In a rare archive recording, you can hear Rawlings and his men discussing whether to carry out further killings.
I don't think one really gains much from having to kill. But the point is that we have set the example. We have shown that we're capable of doing it. I think what we could do is confiscate the property of the rest and send them out to the farms and work.
There's no need for it to stop executions. Mm-hmm. People have already committed these crimes years back.
Yeah.
And then we've got to get rid of these people for the others to understand.
Speaking today from his home in the capital, Accra, Jerry Rawlings says the executions were necessary.
I'm taking responsibility for it all. I have to. There was no alternative. We had to contain it within the military barracks, and we had no choice but to sacrifice the most senior ones, the commanders, so that it didn't spill into the civil front. We first sacrificed two. It was not enough. At 2 a.m., I was woken up by a delegation of warrant officers and ranks that if we did not punish, you know, a lot more, they would go back to their units and they would execute most officers. Had it spilled into the civil front, it would have been disastrous. We couldn't have contained it.
Even though Jerry Rawlings has accepted responsibility for these and subsequent executions, he's never been tried in a court of law. The current 1992 constitution, written during his time as head of state, contains provisions which prevent anyone from being tried for executions that took place during military regimes. In September 1979, after 3 months, civilian rule was restored to Ghana. Rawlings handed over power to the elected president, Dr. Hilaire Lehmann, an Nkrumahist and diplomat. But Flight Lieutenant Rawlings seized power for a second time on New Year's Eve 1981, and this time he stayed for the next 2 decades. Here is Rawlings announcing the coup on the radio.
The military action that was taken in the early hours of 31st December 1981 was to stem the rapid national decline that was upon us. But it was not a military coup in the sense of another opportunity for some soldiers and their allies in trade and the bureaucracy to come to power for their own ends. It is rather to create by this action an opening for real democracy.
They felt betrayed. They, the civilians, they, the workers. I thought enough was enough, because if we don't step in, meanwhile, the country was looking up to me precisely because of 1979. Where is he? Is he not going to save the situation, etc.? I had no choice.
Kwame Nkrumah, in his final years, had ruled the country from the top down. But Nkrumah's intellectual socialism did not appeal to Jerry Rawlings. He saw himself down there among the people at the grassroots.
I was speaking for humanity. I was speaking for ordinary people. I was speaking against the exploitation of people. Of course, I've never read Marx, Lenin, or anything. But what I know about humanity, I think, is probably beyond anything you can read in the books.
Even though he wore military fatigues, Rawlings appointed a civilian cabinet. He instigated what he called participatory democracy, a people's revolution. But the soldier hero also presided over periods of violence, human rights abuse, and disappearances. Over 200 people disappeared during the 80s, all suspected opponents of the Rawlings regime. And there were dozens of political prisoners during his time as military head of state. In 1982, there was an attempted coup on Rawlings' regime, and Kwame Pienim was accused of funding it, which he denies. He was imprisoned for 10 years. Kwame Pienim is one of our leading economists. He has held top positions in state corporations, private business, and at the United Nations. He tells me about his arrest.
The whole thing started when the military took over, when Rawlings took over power. 2 days afterwards, I was giving a public lecture. Somebody asked the question, the role of the military and whether the military are not justified to intervene if politicians are messing around. And in my typical blunt manner, you know, I said, nobody in khaki has the right to become a headmaster to elected people of this country, and that the sovereign people of Ghana who have the right to decide who governs them.
And by men in khaki, you meant?
I mean the soldiers. They did not like that. And of course, for the military regime in those days, what they were looking for was a so-called intellectual to be able to put fear into the Ghanaian public, to be able to dominate people politically.
Rawlings was a good man, but he was not a good president. In my view, he should not have been president.
KB Asante, a friend and colleague of Jerry Rawlings, is nevertheless critical.
He hated the wrong thing to be done. He hated the denial of human rights. But in trying to do this, he denied human rights to so many, so that all kinds of allegations are made against him. He wanted to stop corruption by killing people, execution. He thought they should be got rid of. There is no excuse for execution. And sometimes he thought the legal system was too slow, so people should take the law into their hands and do things. And in trying to change the bad ways or bad things in Ghana, he sometimes compounded them.
50 years ago, we were a country of visionary optimism, a pace setter for the rest of Africa. How did we become a nation of coups and violence? We've had problems dealing with our past, and the courts are slow. But what we have had from 2002 to 2004 is the National Reconciliation Commission on the lines of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Ghana's NRC dealt with over 4,000 cases, from detentions without trial through to coups, executions, deportations, rape, property theft and more, from 1957 up to the 1992 constitution on which Ghana's present multi-party democracy is based. The Catholic Archbishop of Accra, Charles Palmer Buckle, sat on the NRC for its 2 years. He believes it was key in helping Ghana move forward.
I was not only shocked, there were times I openly shed tears for the sufferings of my own Ghanaian people. It was an eye-opening experience for me because I never believed that certain types of atrocities, violations of human rights, did take place in this country. Because you see, as Ghanaians, one of the things we do very well is to cover up for the country and to cover up for one another. And this was the first time people were telling us they had undergone rape, gang rape. They had undergone, atrocious beatings and ill treatments of all kinds. And that was what opened my eyes to the fact that the Ghanaian could also be a wolf to a fellow Ghanaian if the conditions were allowed. But who knows, maybe we needed those scars to look back at and say these things should never happen anymore. And at the same time, heal the country and bring about a united Ghana.
The dream of 1957 was of a peaceful, united Ghana. Ghana has the reputation of being the stable island in the choppy West African Sea. Our neighbors Nigeria, Sierra Leone, Cote d'Ivoire, and Liberia have suffered horrific civil war and ethnic tension. Kwame Nkrumah attempted to keep a lid on Ghana's divisions by minimizing and sidestepping them. Being African, he said, was about not being tribal.
We should call ourselves Ghanaians. All brothers and sisters, members of the same community, the state of Ghana. For until we ourselves purge from our own minds this tribal chauvinism and prejudice of one against the other, we shall not be able to cultivate the wider spirit of brotherhood which our objective of pan-Africanism calls for.
Kwame Nkrumah's focus on the total liberation of Africa meant that he sometimes ignored Ghana's problems at home. For him, our independence could only work within an African political and economic union. 50 years ago, we got our political freedom, but not our economic freedom. The economist Kwame Pienim.
Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, our first president, his clarion call for mobilizing the people of Ghana was, seek ye first the political kingdom and everything else will be added onto it. And unfortunately, it was not. You realize that we should have diversified from cocoa, gold and timber. Now the timber is all gone and we failed. We all knew what we had to do to get independence. But we don't know, we are at a loss. What do we do to attain reasonable economic stability and reasonable living standards for our people?
Ghana's economy reached rock bottom in the early 80s. When Jerry Rawlings took power, the country was bankrupt and hungry. We call this the period of the Rawlings necklace. We could see each other's collarbones.
The economy was devastated. Our reserves were non-existent, financial reserves. And of course, Rawlings then decided to turn to the IMF and the World Bank. And then the structural economic programs started. And let's remember, in the 1990s, This was when Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister of the UK, and Ronald Reagan of the US were pushing market-oriented economies. I think President Rawlings did lay the foundations for the new economy.
From the tightly regulated state socialism of Kwame Nkrumah to capitalist free markets under Jerry Rawlings, Ghana's economy still limps along and a third of our people live on less than a dollar a day. We were once rich in timber, diamonds and gold and the world's top exporter of cocoa. Not today. These are the cocoa fields of Ifijuase in the Ashanti region. William Krampong and his family have farmed here for generations. Speaking in the local Twi language, he tells our translator, Samson, about the problems of cocoa farming today.
The problem with cocoa is that it is seasonal, and so you only get money at a particular period in time, and the rest of the time there's poverty. After repaying the loans that you took, you have very little to pay the school fees for your children and to feed them also. Government should think about, you know, getting into manufacturing and processing cocoa here in this country, Ghana, so that there'll be lots more work, employment for people, and also that you can have more money in your pockets.
Just a few meters away is a group of women and girls cutting yams.
She's
saying that she has a big problem. Life is very difficult for her because she has to take care of four children. She has no income. She has no job. She's just pointing to the daughter and she's saying that she's been driven out of school because she has not paid her fees. She's not happy, and so she's not thinking about independence. It's of no relevance to her.
50 years after gaining our independence, it's now that Ghanaian and African renewal must really begin. Ghana's head of state in this jubilee year is John Kufuor. He became president in the year 2000 when President Rawlings bowed out after nearly 20 years. It was the first peaceful handover of power from one elected government to another in our history. Ghana is today a multi-party democracy, and John Kufuor is generally considered a stable force. He's just been appointed chairman of the African Union, and this week he leads our 50th birthday celebrations. In an exclusive interview for this program, I asked him if he thinks Ghana has achieved its dreams of 1957.
No, I don't believe that. Perhaps it's an endless journey to pursue the dreams of a people, and a people moving away from colonialism into independence. Because the objective with which we entered independence was to become a viable, prosperous, and free sovereign nation. And since independence 50 years ago, the history has been so checkered. And it's taken us quite a while to come back to the original aspirations of freedom and justice and prosperity. So, yes, we are moving along the track, but we are nowhere near saying we are fulfilled.
Is your government following in the footsteps of and following the values of the founding fathers, perhaps particularly Dr. Kwame Nkrumah?
Don't forget he was the pioneering government, president, prime minister. He did very well, but we are not socialists. Politically, Nkrumah, for instance, belonged to what you might describe as left of center, whereas my government and I belong, were described as right of center, liberal democratic tradition. We are not socialists. You see, I've been in power 6 years now, and I believe much of the world is acknowledging that my government has been exemplary, clearly establishing our respect for human rights. And there hasn't been one case where anybody has been arrested for expressing a contrary opinion to governments.
This is our Golden Jubilee year. I believe you count yourself very lucky to be president in this historic year.
Yes.
What are your thoughts? 50 years ago, you were
a young man, 19 years. Is this the Ghana you dreamt?
18 years. Well, no. We all expected so much of our independence. Unfortunately, things didn't work out that way. 50 years have come, and I happen to be the president of the nation on this historic year. Fortunately, it's fallen to my lot to contribute to shaping our country back onto the track of progress and good governance and development. Naturally, my expectation is that this should be the beginning of a new Ghana, a Ghana that is shod of the many misunderstandings of the past, a Ghana in which education of all the citizens at all levels is given priority to lift the country from the brackets of third world into higher brackets, so the people will be confident to be part of the mainstream of globalization, to advance our country, and through us also Africa.
President John Kufuor. And as we celebrate our Golden Jubilee, those words of Kwame Nkrumah spoken on that day, March the 6th, 1957, echo across the land.
At long last, the battle has ended. Ghana, your beloved country, is free forever.
Ghana's battle, Africa's battle, continues.
Pan-Africanism never took off as such, but that does not mean that it's too late for it to take off.
Gamal Nkrumah, Kwame Nkrumah's son.
Because part of Nkrumah's popularity, even today, is his call for African unity. People instinctively know that Pan-Africanism is the only way forward for the continent.
That was the final part of the BBC World Service series, Ghana, Winds of Change, with me, Kweku Sechiadu, here in Accra.
Long live African independence and unity.